just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing how you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Have yeah,
you
absolutely, because I can't
prove either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Good evening once again, citizens of Internetlandia, and we are the O'Reilly Show, here with show 72, again, for Friday.
This episode brought to you by...
Oh, wait, sorry, now it's actually Saturday.
Yeah, August, Saturday now.
August 8th, as we continue our marathon recording session of, this is now hour three of the... First of the Fox News GOP presidential debate.
I immediately regret this decision.
Yes, this is.
I've made a horrible mistake.
I do regret this decision, as I was unaware that it was three freaking hours until I actually managed to download the content. So yeah, I'm terribly sorry. And yet I'm not terribly sorry because this was that what they did was that they secluded all of the. They did a blackout, basically, of the content. And this content is important for the voters. You guys need to know what these people are thinking and what they're talking about. And to hide it away, I think, is a disservice to the people. So this is our public service.
You should know.
Yeah. We are going through this for you.
Yes.
We love you.
Because you should know how batshit crazy these freaking psychopaths
are.
They are
suffering for your benefit.
They are
keep
a bit,
getting elected.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are ranked nationally well enough to have a shot at the title.
Yeah, it's intense. It is intense. So far we have
There's no tents involved in this.
No wigwams, no TPs, it's not too tense. No. Okay. We've heard the Donald, we've heard the Carson, we've heard the Rubio and the Cruz and all of them go
and
off.
No
on,
wrists were slashed in the making of this yet.
No, not yet. This is, and also we are all still conscious and our livers are still functioning as far as we can tell. It wasn't so bad during that second hour. It wasn't so bad. I only did four shots. So it wasn't so bad. Hour one, on the other hand, almost killed poor David. that was fairly rough. That was show 70.
He made the mistake of not pacing himself.
Yeah, 71. Well, he it's like drink. Yeah. There was no pacing. Too bad. Okay. So with no further ado, because we would like to sleep at least sometime this weekend. So here is. Hour three, part two of the Fox News Republican primary debate, one of probably too many.
Oh boy.
And it's just before 10 p.m. on the East Coast. Welcome back to Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, Ohio, and the very first Republican primary debate of the 2016 presidential campaign. 10 candidates on the stage, selected based on their standing in 5 national polls. And tonight they are facing off, answering the questions you want asked, we hope.
Gentlemen, we're obviously digging into some subjects. We're also going to change it up every once in a while throughout the next hour and have mini rounds where we ask, you're not going to like it, only a couple of candidates' questions on those subjects. This is the first of the mini rounds, and it's about somebody whose name probably hasn't been mentioned enough so far tonight. Governor Kasich, whoever the Republican nominee is, it looks, at least for now, like whoever that nominee is, he or she, will be facing off against Hillary Clinton. You know how after whoever the Republican nominee is, she will say that you, whoever it is, support the rich while she supports the middle class, that you want to suppress the rights of women and minorities. She wants to move the country forward while you, the Republicans, want to take the country back to the past. How will you...
At least they know.
How will you answer that and take Hillary Clinton on?
Well, let's start off with being a mailman, so I understand her
concerns of all the folks across this country, some of whom have trouble, making ends meet. But I think she will come in a narrow way. The nominee of this party, if they're going to win, has got to come at it in a big way, which is pro-growth, which is balancing budgets. You know, we were talking about it. People were saying, could we do it? I was the chairman of the budget committee and the lead architect the last time it happened in Washington. And when we did it, we had great economic growth. We cut taxes and we had a big surplus. Economic growth is the key. Economic growth is the key to everything. But once you have economic growth, it is important that we reach out to people who live in the shadows, the people who don't seem to ever think they get a fair deal. And that includes people in our minority community. That includes people who feel as though they don't have a chance to move up. You know, America is a miracle country. And we have to restore the sense that the miracle will apply to you. Each and every one of the people in this country who's watching tonight, lift everybody, unite everybody, and build a stronger United.
How?
Again,
what's your plan?
I know. Answer this question, but we're only going to ask one other candidate before we move on to a different subject, Dr. Carson. Basically, same question to you. If Hillary Clinton is the nominee and she comes at you with that kind of line of attack, how will you take her on?
If Hillary is the candidate, which I doubt, that would be a dream come true. But, the fact of the matter is, she is the epitome of the secular progressive movement. And
No, she isn't.
In fact, no. People are uninformed. The Alinsky model, taking advantage of useful. I just happen to believe that people are not stupid. And the way I will come at it is to educate people, help people to actually understand that is that progressive movement that is causing them the problems. You know, you look at
Of course. Point the finger. Don't answer the question. You have no plan of your own.
Country, what I would do is find a way to drive wedges between all the people, drive the debt to an unsustainable level, and then step off the stage as a world leader and let our enemies increase while we decrease our capacity as a military person. And that's what she's doing.
Wow. Okay, that's a nice straw man he's built there.
Yep.
Economy, jobs, and money, and the government. And Governor Bush, I'm going to start with you. You have made a bold promise in your announcement. You have promised 4% economic growth and 19 million new jobs if you were fortunate enough to serve two terms as president. That many jobs, 19 million, would be triple what your father and your brother accomplished together. And 4% growth, the last president to average that was Lyndon Johnson during the height of the Vietnam War. So, question, how on earth specifically?
By going to war, obviously.
We've done it 27 times since World War II.
Fly.
To lift our spirits and have high, lofty expectations. For this great country of ours. The new normal of 2% that the left is saying you can't do anything about is so dangerous for our country. There are 6 million people living in poverty today, more than when Barack Obama got elected. 6.5 million people are working part-time, most of whom want to work full-time. We've created rules and taxes on top of every aspiration of people, and the net result is we're not growing fast, income's not growing. A 4% growth strategy means you fix a convoluted tax code. You get in and you change every aspect of regulations that are job killers. You get rid of Obamacare and replace it with something.
Get rid of Obamacare.
And
replace it with something.
Revolution in our country. President and Hillary Clinton, who can't even say she's for the XL pipeline, even after she's left. Give me a break. Of course we're for it. We should be for things to create high sustained economic growth. And frankly, fixing our immigration system and turning it into an economic driver is part of this as well. We can do this.
Okay, no, you can't, and I will tell you why.
Pause it.
Yes, please.
For governor.
Okay.
Two things. First of all, I want to say, this whole get rid of Obamacare thing. The unemployment rate was almost 10%. It was like just a shade under. When the Affordable Care Act was passed, it is dropped. It is 5% now. It's cut by half in June of this year.
Okay.
The economy has added 12 million jobs since Obamacare was passed. And
okay.
So that's just complete bullshit right there. And, you know, he talks about, and then he goes on and talks about, you know, this 4% economic goal. And, you know, we can do this. And it's been done, you know, 20, however many times he quotes. That's bullshit.
27 times.
Yeah. Since World War II, only 4 presidential terms have done it. Most of the time, it's under 4%. And that has been healthy, sustainable, because it happens every year. And that's right, fine. Right. What's more important about economic growth is equal economic growth, because sure, the economy is growing. There's more money in circulation, but it's all in the hands of a few people. That's not the point here. But besides that, professional economists say that after the huge destructive downturn that our country took years ago, that's simply not going to happen in the near future. It's not going to happen in the next decade. We're not going to see 4% for at least like 15 years. Well, that's what the professionals say.
The only way that we're going to see any dramatic change like that is if we go to war again. Because, yeah, the last time it happened was Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson.
Well,
that is not a good option.
You don't have to go to war per se, but you can have massive infrastructure, explosive infrastructure growth.
Right, but that would
but the only way you have explosive infrastructure growth is either through warfare, that is true, or through something,
through reinvesting in our country,
or through huge public work projects on the order of the New Deal. That's right. How you get explosive right. growth like that. Which and they're never going to do that.
Yeah. They're on the record.
No, because that's big government.
Yeah.
Right. Because you didn't build that road. No, anyway, moving on. I think we should move on.
Of Wisconsin back in 2010, you promised that you would create 250,000 jobs in your first term, first 4 years. In fact, Wisconsin added barely half that and ranked 35th in the country in job growth. Now you're running for president and you're promising an economic plan in which everyone will earn a piece of the American dream.
Lots of promises.
Your record in Wisconsin. Why should voters believe you?
Well, the voters in Wisconsin elected me last year for the third time because they wanted someone who aimed high, not aimed low. Before I came in, the unemployment rate was over 8%. It's now down to 4.6%. We've more than made up for the jobs that were lost during the recession, and the rate in which people are working is almost 5 points higher than it is nationally. You know, people like Hillary Clinton think you grow.
That's not true. The national unemployment rate is 6%. You're only beating it by 1%.
We're in or around Washington, D.C. I think most of us in America understand that people, not the government, creates jobs. And one of the best things we can do is get the government out of the way, repeal Obamacare, put in rein in all the out-of-control regulations, put in place an all-the-above energy policy, give people the education and skills that they need to succeed, and lower the tax rate, reform the tax code. That's what I'll do as president, just like I did in Wisconsin.
I'd like a pause.
Christy,
there you go.
I get my pause here.
Where did you move to?
Minnesota. Fifth fastest growing economy in the nation.
Yep.
$2 billion surplus. They raised taxes, and yeah, they are boomtown up here. But to go back to, these guys are all harping on repeal the Affordable Care Act. Just a little bit of trivia for everybody who might be listening. They did the math on repealing the Affordable Care Act, and they actually had to change the rules in Congress because repealing the Affordable Care Act would add to the deficit. And the reason they had to change the rules was because they instituted a rule that they could not enact a change that would increase the deficit. And that would.
Yep.
So they had to make a special exemption for the Affordable Care Act so that they could continue trying to repeal it.
Yeah, it would cost us money to get rid of this thing that benefits like 17 million people.
But it's a colossal failure.
A colossal failure. No, it's not. 17 million people who didn't have health care now.
And rising.
An additional $2 billion on the deficit is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I've said it before, because for the viewer at home, or where you happen to be, a car, whatever, you are getting an insight into your host's lives. You know, I've gone on the record saying, I'm not happy with my current health care plan, my current health care provider, through work, because they're trying to screw me, because they're putting me on these, you know, health spending accounts and things like that, that don't actually live up to what they say that they're going to pay. You know, because the health spending account, you're supposed to then take this little MasterCard they give you and actually be able to buy, like, prescription drugs or even over-the-counter drugs and things for your health, including vitamins and things like that. Or glasses. These things right here. I was told when we actually got on this plan from my employer, I was told that I would be able to pay for these with that health spending account. Then, as soon as everything comes in, I see a little flyer. After I've bought these, by the way, with that health spending account, that says it's not eligible. So now I'm going to have to try it again through them, submitting massive amounts of paperwork for receipts that they should already have, since they're the ones that provided the credit card that paid it.
Yeah.
They should already have the receipt. They should already know what's on it. But no. And so I'm going to have to do all that just for them to tell me no, so that then I'm going to have to pay out of pocket for something that I was told that I wasn't going to have to pay out of pocket for. Some $80.
Yeah, because that's what happens when healthcare is privatized. They don't give a crap. They just want to make money off of your suffering. And that's what a single payer system and Obamacare is. Obamacare is not a single payer system, but it is moving in the right direction. I'm going to clarify that statement right now. That is what we're trying to fix here, to make people's health not be a profit point.
That would be
good. To take the insurance industry up to the 10,000 foot level.
Yeah.
The entire point, the entire method through which they gain profit as a private company that is out to make a profit, is by selling you a service they have no intention of providing.
That's true, because that's the only way that they make money and keep money.
If they actually provide the service that they promise you, there's no profit in for them.
Yeah, they only make money if you remain healthy. The minute you get sick, they lose money.
And they don't want that.
Right, because it's bad for their shareholders because they're stock held. Okay.
And fun fact trivia number two, the Affordable Care Act makes it illegal for them to boot you off just because you got sick.
Yes. Thankfully.
They still try, though. They're going to
They'll make it uncomfortable for you to be on it, but they still have to cover you, at least for your catastrophic care and things like that, because that's just part of the rules.
Yeah.
So they can't get rid of you, you know, if you end up with something horrible. You may need to contact your HR representatives to actually navigate the labyrinthian systems that are in place to prevent you from actually getting your information and care. But at least
it's really like
do that. It's the Incredibles.
It's really like the world of Mr. Incredible and the Incredibles.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's exactly like that.
That is the truest example.
I can't tell you to fill out this form.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the truest example of how healthcare works that there is.
Yeah, that's precisely how it is. Okay. So enough of that.
Onward. In a subject that is a big issue in both of your campaigns, and that is entitlement reform. You say that
Christine Huckabee is
retirement age, have to raise the retirement age and to cut benefits for Social Security and Medicare. And you say that some of the candidates here on the stage are lying. Governor Huckabee says he can save Social Security and Medicare without doing any of that. Is he lying?
No, he's not lying. He's just wrong. I mean, so there's a difference. I'm the only guy on the stage who's put out a detailed 12-point plan on entitlement reform, and here's why. Because 71% right now, entitlements and debt service, 71%. And we have spent the last hour and 5 minutes talking about the other 29% and no time on the 71%. And that makes no sense. Now, let me tell you exactly what we would do on Social Security. Yes, we'd raise the retirement age 2 years and phase it in over 25 years. That means we'd raise it 1 month a year for 25 years when we're all living longer and living better lives. Secondly, we would means test Social Security for those who are making over $200,000 a year in retirement income and who have $4 to $5 million in liquid assets saved. They don't need that Social Security check. Social Security is meant to be to make sure that no one who's worked hard and played by the rules bills and paid into the system, grows old in poverty in America. If we don't deal with this problem, it will bankrupt our country or lead to massive tax increases, neither one that we want in this country.
Why have you and the rest of the GOP been gutting Social Security?
Well, he isn't.
He's not.
Can't do it. And
he can't do it.
Actually has a plan. And you know what? Raising the retirement age, of course, there's the knee-jerk reaction that it's going to happen immediately. The fact that he's only, you know, a month over 2 years, you know, a month, you know,
a month a year for 24 years, really.
Yeah. That's not bad.
That's bad. That's not bad. Honestly. Not bad.
I'm okay with that.
Honestly.
I'm planning on living forever anyway. So it's okay.
The reality of Social Security is they gutted all the money out of it, which it was fully funded.
Yeah.
And it had a bank account that was full and should be approximately, I think it was supposed to be at $2.1 trillion sitting pretty in
it
the
was
bank
funded
making
and
interest.
Sustainable. Yeah. And then they
it was fully sustainable until they borrowed all the money out of it to pay for wars.
And then never put it back in.
Right.
And never put it back in. And not a single person has gone to jail for doing that. And that's probably the biggest case of fraud ever perpetrated against the American public right there.
Yeah.
You say that, no, he didn't do it personally, but no, you know what? I don't care if he was just a governor at the time. He is part of the GOP, and he is complicit in their actions. If you still stand behind them when they do bullshit like this, you are guilty by association.
So
because that is a crime.
So even as a voter, somebody is guilty of that?
Yes, I do think so. Okay. I think that anyone who still votes for the GOP, they're fucking criminals, and I'll tell that to their face.
Ooh, okay.
I've done it to my own family members. There are people in my family who don't talk to me anymore.
Well,
I don't give a shit.
That's definitely one way to get to slim down your Christmas card expenditure.
No, you're a criminal if you support this, because they're defrauding the American people. They are stealing your hard-earned tax dollars and spending it on their personal escapades. That is money that is supposed to be yours, held in trust by the government to pay you to help you survive when you're old and gray. They stole that from you.
Instead of helping out with your Meals on Wheels, they instead bought tanks that are going to rot on a tarmac somewhere because they were never used, never wanted.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, but we're still going to build 1,000 more a year because we have to maintain that capability just in case this phantom enemy, which doesn't have tanks, doesn't have boats, doesn't have planes, and doesn't even really have a fully vested or fully realized government backing it, maybe finds a way to get a couple hundred people over here.
Yeah, because no.
That's scary.
We've got
enough hunters here to deal with that problem.
It's absurd on the most basic level because we don't need numbers when we have a technological advantage. Advantage. We need proper training and tactics. We can shrink the numbers in our armed forces and still be able to effectively protect the nation, not to mention go to war, because we have just pure firepower.
Speaking of firepower, one of my favorite weapons of all time is just a kinetic drop. A tank without a parachute dropped from a C-130
is a kinetic bombardment weapon.
That's a kinetic bombardment weapon, right, if I've ever heard of one. And you know, we've got all of those just sitting around doing nothing.
Okay, we send them to the edge of space, about 200,000 feet.
We're not allowed. It's against law. It's against international law.
Yeah. We can't be.
There is no orbital weaponry allowed by international law.
Yeah.
Who cares? We torture people now.
Because we should be better than other people.
That's right. That's right. We should be better.
We should be the example.
We should meet the expectation we have of others. That's all I gotta say. Okay, let's.
Yeah,
let's
we don't do that.
I know we don't do
we
that.
We don't do that at all.
I don't care that we don't. We should. And it's people like these assholes who are making us all look bad.
Right. So let's see what Huckabee's reaction is to Governor Christie's.
Governor Huckabee, you say the change in entitlements, the kind of thing that Governor Christie is talking about, would be breaking a promise to the American people. And you say that you can keep those programs, save Social Security, save Medicare, without those kinds of reforms through a fair tax, which is a broad tax on consumption. Please explain to Governor Christie how that would work and how you could save these programs without the kind of painful reforms he says we need.
Let's all be reminded, 60 million Americans are on Social Security. 60 million. A third of those people depend on 90% of their income from Social Security. Nobody in this country is on Social Security because they made the decision when they were starting work at 14 that they wanted to entrust some of their money with the government. The government took it out of their check whether they wanted them to or not. And if a person goes to 65, they're going to spend 51 years with the government reaching into their pocket at every paycheck. Now, here's the point. Whose fault is it that the system is screwed up? Is it the recipients or is it the government? And if Congress wants to mess with the retirement program, why don't we let them start by changing their retirement program and not have one instead of talking about getting rid of Social Security and Medicare that was robbed $700 billion to pay for Obamacare? It's always the government figures that they can do.
Rob to pay for Obamacare. The Social Security chest was empty before Obamacare was even a gleam in President Obama's eye.
Obamacare is self-funded.
It is.
The Social Security chest was empty before the presidency was a gleam in President Obama's eye. It was empty before his first.
No, it was.
It's been empty for a long time.
It hasn't been empty for that long. It was definitely being fucked with, but it wasn't empty until Bush's war in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Awesome. Okay. Let's see.
We are allied with Eurasia. We are at war with East Asia.
We have always been at war with East Asia.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. There's some 1984 shit happening on that stage right now.
Yeah. Orwell would be doing one
he
of these.
He'd be a proud of days. You guys learned well. Good on you.
He probably just would shoot himself. I'm done. Okay. Ooh. As it warms up, it burns a little bit. Okay, moving on.
That's a thing.
Yeah, yeah. This episode also, just like the last one, brought to you by Wild Turkey American Honey. Available at finer liquor retailers everywhere. Okay.
Brought to you by Johnny Walker Black.
Always good. Always a good choice.
Yes.
All right, moving on.
People, many of whom are and depend on that money, and I just think it's fundamentally lying to the people and stealing from them, and we shouldn't be doing it.
Well, Chris,
30 seconds.
Yeah, sure. I don't disagree with ending Congress's retirement program. I'm a governor. I don't have a retirement program in my state, and I don't disagree with that. But here's the news for the American people. He's complaining about the lying and stealing. The lying and stealing has already occurred. The trust fund is filled with IOUs. We can't fix the problem just by entering Congress's retirement. That's worth about this much. We need to go at the fundamental problem. And the fundamental problem is that this system is broken. It has been stolen from. We have been lied to. We need a strong leader to tell the truth and fix it.
All right, this is it. 30 seconds, finally.
I hate that I agree with Governor Christie on things.
You ask about how we fund it. One of the reasons
twice a day
is the only funding stream comes from people who get a wage. The people who get wages is declining dramatically. Most of the income in this country is made by people at the top who get dividends and capital gains. The fair tax transforms the process by which we fund Social Security and Medicare because the money paid at consumption is paid by everybody, including illegals, prostitutes, pimps, drug dealers, all the people that are freeloading off the system now. That's why it ought to be a transformed system.
All right.
very, very small minority in the population.
There's no proof that these freeloaders exist. About how you never has been
stage to grow the economy. I want to ask you about your business record. Trump corporations, casinos and hotels have declared bankruptcy four times over the last quarter century. In 2011, you told Forbes magazine this: I've used the laws of the country to my advantage. But at the same time, financial experts involved in those bankruptcies say that lenders to your companies lost billions of dollars. Question, sir, with that record, why should we trust you to run the nation's business?
Because I have used this country, just like the greatest people that you read about every day in business have used the laws of this country, the chapter laws, to do a great job for my company, for myself, for my employees, for my family, etc. I have never gone bankrupt, by the way. I have never. But out of hundreds of deals... Out of hundreds of deals that I've done, hundreds, on four occasions, I've taken advantage of the laws of this country. Like other people, I'm not going to name their names because I'm not going to embarrass, but virtually every person that you read about on the front page of the business sections, they've used the law. The difference is when somebody else uses those laws, nobody writes about it. When I use it, they say, oh, Trump, Trump, Trump. The fact is, I built a net worth of more than $10 billion. I have a great, great company. I employ thousands of people, and I'm very proud of the job I did. Again, Chris, hundreds and hundreds of deals. Four times I've taken advantage of the laws, and frankly, so has everybody else.
And I will say yet again that independent examination has shown that your net worth is a fraction of what you're saying it is. You liar.
Nine. In that case alone, lenders to your company lost over $1 billion and more than 1,100 people were laid off.
Well,
is that the way that you run the country?
Let me tell you about the lenders. First of all, these lenders aren't babies. These are total killers. These are not the nice, sweet little people that you think, okay? You know, I mean, you're living in a world of the make-believe, Chris. You want to know the truth. And I had the good sense to leave Atlantic City, which, by the way, Caesars just went bankrupt. Every company, Chris can tell you, every company virtually in Atlantic City went bankrupt. Every company. And let me just tell you, I had the good sense, and I've gotten a lot of credit in the financial pages. 7 years ago, I left Atlantic City before it totally cratered, and I made a lot of money in Atlantic City, and I'm very proud of it. I want to tell you that. Very, very proud of it. By the way, this country right now owes $19 trillion, and they need somebody like me to straighten out that mess.
Senator Rubio, more than 3,000 people sent us questions about the economy and jobs on Facebook, and here is a video question from Tanya Sialko from Philadelphia. Here she is.
Please describe one action you would do to make the economic environment more favorable for small businesses and entrepreneurs and anyone dreaming of opening their own business.
That's a great question.
Senator, how do you answer Tanya?
That's a great question. First of all, it begins by having leaders that recognize that the economy we live in today is dramatically different from the one we had 5 years ago. It's an economy that now has placed us in global competition with dozens of other countries around the world. Now, the big companies that have connections with Washington, they can affect policies to help them. But the small companies like the one Tanya's talking about, they're the ones that are struggling. The first thing we need to do is we need to even out the tax code for small businesses so that we lower their tax rate to 25%, just as we need to lower it for all businesses. We need to have a regulatory budget in America that limits the amount of regulations on our economy. We need to repeal and replace Obamacare. And we need to...
It always comes back to Obamacare. It always comes back to putting everyone on this equal flat rate. But that equal flat rate is never fair to the little guy.
No.
Over 40% of small and mid-sized banks that loan money to small businesses have been wiped out since Dodd-Frank has passed.
It's pretty simple. Equal and fair is equal and fair in proportion. You own a proportionally more of the economy, then you should pay proportionally more in taxes for what you own and control.
Today, President Obama...
I like that. Rubio is the first guy to bring up Dodd-Frank and say we need to bring it back.
Yeah. Knee-jerk partisans, adding that hardliners in Iran who chant death to America were, quote, making common cause with the Republican caucus. Here's what two of your opponents on the 5 p.m. debate stage said about Iran.
I will tell you one thing. I would whole lot rather had Carly Fiorina over there doing our negotiation than John Kerry. Maybe we would have gotten a deal where we didn't give everything away. But the issue for us is to have a Congress that stands up and says not only no, but hell no to this money going to a regime that is going to use it for terror.
When America does not lead, the world is a dangerous and a tragic place. This is a bad deal. Obama broke every rule of negotiation.
But, you know, they say this, you know, America should lead, America should lead. The rest of the world hates us for sticking our nose where we don't belong.
I'm going to ask a few of you this. First, Governor Walker, you've said...
Good leadership is knowing when it's your turn to not do anything.
Yeah. Yes.
What then?
Well, first off, let's remember, I still remember as a kid tying a yellow ribbon around the tree in front of my house during the 444 days that Iran held 52 Americans hostage. Iran is not a place we should be doing business with. To me, you terminate the deal on day one. You reinstate the sanctions authorized by Congress. You go to Congress and put in place even more crippling sanctions in place. And then you convince our allies to do the same. This is not bad with Iran. This is bad with ISIS. It is tied together. And once and for all, we need a leader who's going to stand up and do something about it. It's yet another example of the failed foreign policy of the Obama-Clinton doctrine.
Senator Paul.
Okay. I'm going to stop it right there because I have no idea where we are right now because my computer crashed yet again.
It's talking about foreign policy and the deal with Iran and all that crap about how America needs to be a world leader and how Obama's foreign policy is failing. Well, America's popularity overseas is the highest it's been in years because of Obama's policies. Because, again, the rest of the world is fucking tired of America's imperialistic attitude towards the rest of the world.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. All right. I have nothing to say about that. Carry on.
Did you tear up the deal on day one?
We were done.
I oppose the Iranian deal and will vote against it. I don't think that the president negotiated from a position of strength, but I don't immediately discount negotiations. I'm a Reagan conservative. Reagan did negotiate.
Right.
But you have to negotiate from a position of strength, and I think President Obama gave away too much too early. If there's going to be a negotiation, you're going to have to believe somehow that the Iranians are going to comply. And I asked this question to John Kerry. I said, do you believe they're trustworthy? And he said, no. And I said, well, how are we going to get them to comply? I would have never released the sanctions before there was consistent evidence of compliance. Governor Huckabee, what do you think about what Senator Paul just said?
Ronald Reagan said trust but vilify. President Obama is trust but vilify. He trusts our enemies and vilifies everyone who disagrees with him. And the reason we disagree with him has nothing to do with party. It has to do with the incredibly dangerous place that this world is going to be as a result of a deal in which we...
There is one grain of truth here. They don't trust him because of party differences. They don't. It's that they don't trust him because he's black, because they're a bunch of racists.
We've said anywhere, anytime negotiations and inspections, we get that up. We said that we would make sure that they didn't have any nuclear capacity. We gave that up. The president can't tell us what we got. I'll tell you what the world got. The world has a burgeoning nuclear power that didn't, as the Soviets say, we might defend ourselves in a war. What the Iranians have said is, we will wipe Israel off the face of the map, and we will bring death to America. When someone points...
I don't think they actually said that.
No. Iran didn't say that.
Let's pause it for a moment.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bringing Iran into the big boys club of the nuclear countries is a double-edged sword. Yes, they're someone we don't like. Yes, they're someone we don't trust. We don't trust Russia. But
their nuclear
there
power.
Is also there is a whole different scythe hanging over your head when you're a nuclear power, and that is if you send a nuclear weapon and attack one of our allies, that will open up our justification for using our nuclear weapons on you. And we have approximately 100 of them, and we've never really gotten to use the new ones.
Well, yeah, the term is MAD, mutually assured destruction. And the problem that any new nuclear power has is that the big boys on the nuclear stage, America and Russia, and to some extent China as well, they've got quite a bit of capability. We've had our nukes for a long time, and we've got a lot of them. So, y'all might be able to do some damage to a small portion of whatever country you attack. Or if it's a small enough country like Israel, you might be able to wipe out the entire thing. But you are going to see.
But you're not
going to
be there. Afterwards.
Well,
yeah.
Well, here's the other thing. And it's not talked about nearly as often as it should. As soon as a nation becomes a nuclear power, they have raised the stakes. Everything that they did with conventional weapons at that point is no longer nearly
as relevant
as it is with the big story, the whole kit and caboodle, all of it. Because they could wipe out all of their people at once.
I mean, look at America. Look at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Look at how, you know, that was ages ago. And
those were the weakest of the weak weapons.
And those were the weakest nuclear weapons that have ever existed and ever
will. We don't even make nukes that are that pitiful anymore.
They're those are
we don't have a nuke that's that small.
We have multiple warhead deployment weapons that can take out an entire one missile can take out an entire country easily.
Yeah.
As long as it makes it through. And we've got so many
things. And it will, because Iran has nothing to defend against it with.
Yeah, the other thing is, there are no defenses against ICBMs. They simply are. There is no defense against them yet.
There
are defenses, but
you really know about them.
You have to see the weapon coming.
It's on the cusp of, it's probably not legal for us to put that up there, but it's up there.
You might be able to stop them, but with the sheer number of warheads incoming, you're going to lose. That's the whole point of the mutually assured destruction thing. But really, talking about the weaponry is still premature, because there's a huge difference between a nuclear power plant and a nuclear bomb. And I will never not talk about this, and I will never stop trying to beat this into people's heads. Just because you have a power plant doesn't mean you have the bomb. They're two entirely different things, and one of them is much more difficult than the other. The Manhattan Project didn't exist to give us the ability to split the atom.
No.
That's not what it was for. We could split the atom. We could make nuclear power without the Manhattan Project. The reason we spent so many millions of dollars on the Manhattan Project was to weaponize it.
Yeah.
Adjusted, it was probably hundreds of billions of dollars in today's dollars.
Just absurd amounts of money.
Stupid. We spent stupid money making that thing.
But so did everybody else.
Yeah, but we were the only ones who succeeded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hitler was close. So we did it. Nazi Germany did it. Russia did it. And China and Japan both did it. So that's five different countries spending the equivalency of like half of our half of the national deficit.
Yeah.
Right? Because national deficit is like $1 trillion a year.
As much money
anymore.
As they could really.
Yeah, but Let's look at it another way.
It's not about money at this point, though. Let's look at it another way. When you're dealing with something that could be the survival of your people, cost no longer has relevance. People work without pay. People work as slave labor, essentially, for a cause. So, and suddenly resources that would have cost something on an open market no longer cost anything because they're going into a special resource. So when you're dealing with things that involve complete game-changing strategies, cost becomes moot.
It's still worth looking at because you need to look at the sheer scale of the work involved. Like I said, we understood the principles behind the splitting of the atom, and we could build power plants out of that. But we and five other nations in the world spent just horrific amounts of money and expended just obscene amounts of resources, and only one of us succeeded in making the bomb.
Right.
In time to make a difference.
That's how difficult it is.
That's a good point.
But that's how difficult it is to weaponize nuclear capability. It's incredibly devastating. I'm not saying it's not, but getting a hold of it is hard as balls.
Developing the technique is dangerous. It's risky because if you make the wrong move, then you die at the wrong time. And that's not good. You know, we do not hear about the mistakes they made. We don't hear about that, do we?
Here's the bottom line with Iran is it's been largely vilified, but really they haven't really taken a truly aggressive stance. There's been saber rattling.
Yeah, well, right? So Russia's been saber rattling lately too. Are we going to go back into a
cold war? If we're going to talk about if we want to compare Russia and Iran as apples to apples, Iran has been a fucking peacenik compared to Russia.
Yeah, seriously.
Who is actively engaging in mock dogfights with our fighters over international waters.
Yeah.
That's a whole different there's a whole different game saber rattling that's going on where Iran is actually being very chill about the whole thing, if you want to talk about it. Saber rattling is more rhetoric than anything actually to get stirred up about.
We definitely.
And as far as these people in the desert saying death to America, they can't get here. They're in a desert thousands of miles away. So
get over yourself. The best they can do is burn a flag. Right? That's about it.
Yeah. Well, it's like...
Yeah.
There's this thing, and I'm going to... I make references to Civilization a lot, but I think it illustrates a good point in this case, because you play a game of Civilization, and I find this is true of most people that I talk to, regardless of what age you're in and what level of technology you have, the only people who you care about are the people on the same continent as you, mm-hmm. because if someone on another continent as me declares war on me, I don't care, because they can't get to me. If I share borders with somebody, they can march their army right to my doorstep.
Yeah, that's the favorite thing. Land war and everything kind of.
Yeah, if they're across the ocean, they have to cross the fucking ocean to get to me.
Yeah,
and it's really easy to stop an aquatic invasion. An amphibious invasion is really hard to do, and there's a reason for that. Because when you're on the sea, you're vulnerable as shit. So
and with our
why are we afraid of them? They can't get here. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, they're afraid of terrorism. They're afraid of fear.
Yeah, they're afraid of the terrorism that hasn't happened since 9/11. We haven't had a single foreign terror plot on American soil since then. We've had plenty of domestic terror, a bunch of lone white gunmen. But we haven't had any foreign attacks on American soil since 9/11.
That's very, very true.
There's no proof.
None.
Until you can prove to me that there is an actual threat, shut your damn mouth.
Well, what we'll say.
Furthermore, the TSA has not prevented a single attack. They cannot point to a single attack and say, you see that? That would have happened if it weren't for us.
Nope.
We caught this.
There have been no attacks and no conclusive events prevented.
And in point of fact, they did a test with 60 or 70 people who they knew it was coming. They even knew what airports were targeted for getting illicit items through. Guns, knives, all kinds of stuff. And they caught approximately 5 out of over 100.
That's not very good odds.
No.
Really bad odds.
No.
actually.
It's literally all for show.
Yeah, so, but so if...
getting through
if on our own drills...
When we have security theater, that's largely what the TSA and largely a lot of what Homeland Security...
It's really expensive theater.
The best theater is expensive. You know, coming from a theater background, you do have to pay a little bit more for that those backdrops and things like that. I mean, it's true.
But the point, I think the real takeaway from this is if you said 5% out of 100 in the drill, but it was a war game. We did a war game, and we had a 5% success rate. If our current defenses have a 5% success rate, they're so abysmally bad they have a 5% success rate, and there have still been zero attacks, obviously there is no threat.
Yeah.
If our defenses are that bad and we're still not being attacked, the threat does not exist.
You know,
there are certain statistical threats that do exist, but the thing is, even though our defenses are abysmal, the game changed after 9/11. Because the expectation before that date was, okay, they're going to take the plane, they're going to land it somewhere, and they're going to try to ransom us off, and the Navy SEALs will come in and kill them. And we'll all go home and party and drink.
No, I'm not saying the nature of warfare didn't evolve, because it did, and it's always going to evolve in a violent fashion like that. Someone's going to try a tactic that's never expected, and it's going to work, and then you're going to have to adapt. But
right. But what to continue on the other half of my point there, the passengers have stopped every attempt at terrorism on a plane since 9/11.
Yep.
The passengers did.
Well,
they are going to duct tape you to your seat.
But even so, even with those, you know, quote unquote incidents where civilians have stopped terror attacks, there's still no conclusive evidence that it was a terror attack. The only evidence that we have is that those were, again, lone gunman situations.
Yeah, we can never rule out just a crazy person. One crazy person can do a lot of damage.
It doesn't have to be an organized group for it to be a terror attack. The whole point of a terror attack is simply to cause
fear.
But their rhetoric, the
GOP's rhetoric, is that it is this huge clandestine organization, and that it's like this fucking, this fucking Islamic Illuminati.
The GOP
is not.
Islamic Illuminati?
Yes.
Their rhetoric is that it is Islam.
Yeah, it's
radical Islam. Yeah. Remember, radical
Islam. But they never define.
I'm cutting past all that crap. Because all three of us here, I think, know that they mean Islam.
Yeah, they just mean Islam. It's absolutely
a threat to the majority that Christianity currently enjoys in this country, and the power that they've enjoyed since its inception. Basically up until the past 10 years, where they can feel their grip on power actually slipping right through their fingers.
Yeah.
The quote unquote freedoms that they enjoyed previously, the freedom to relegate women to a role within the household, the freedom to, you know, vilify and demonize and oppress people they don't like, whether
anyone
they be minorities
or
anyone not like them, minorities, and especially those gays,
because
of Leviticus,
because God, but the point, it's this culture that they're propagating of us versus them, essentially. This culture of, you know, we are the epitome of perfection, and anyone who's different is wrong. It's still founded on this idea that there's this mass conspiracy. Everyone's out to get them. So, yes, there can be individual acts of terror, and that can happen, and that, you know, have been prevented by civilian interference and all that stuff that you pointed out. But those incidents are of zero value to either their rhetoric or to opposing that rhetoric, because they can see, look, there are terror attacks happening and we're stopping them. No, there aren't, because the story you're telling me is that it's this highly organized Islamic jihad. This is just one guy with a crazy idea in his head. So that doesn't count. And that's
Well, jihad doesn't have to be organized. You only need one person for a jihad.
But that's their rhetoric.
Gentlemen, we have 40 minutes remaining in this video, and I am more than 40% through with my bottle. This is not good. These are not good odds, my friend.
Carry on my way.
Not good odds. I do not like these odds.
We truly must continue. I must bring you back from the brink of whatever it is that you've been discussing at this point. I'm not sure where the narrative has run off to.
Well, it's their fault. Their narrative is all over the goddamn place, and it's hard to follow.
Well, it's true because they're evading the questions because they're politicians, and that's what they do.
Mr. Cowan, second star on the right, and straight on till morning.
Engage.
Well, the first debate night of the 2016 presidential campaign continues from Cleveland after a short timeout.
Of course, it
was right before a timeout.
Right there.
It's just.
I believe the response is go to hell.
Welcome back, gentlemen. We'll move on now to discuss some social issues across the board. Governor Bush.
Oh, this is going to be glorious.
This is going to hurt.
By a series of videos. You now say that you support ending federal funding for this organization. However, until late 2014, right before you started your campaign, you sat on the board of a Bloomberg charity that quite publicly gave tens of millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood while you were a director. How could you not know about these well-publicized donations? And if you did know, how could you...
He's being booed.
Yep.
I joined the Bloomberg Foundation because of Mike Bloomberg's shared commitment for meaningful education reform. That's why I was on it. We never had a debate about the budget. It was presented and we approved it, not item by item. Here's my record. As governor of the state of Florida, I defunded Planned Parenthood. I created a culture of life in our state.
That's right, you bastard.
We were the only state to appropriate money for crisis pregnancy centers. We expanded dramatically the number of adoptions out of our foster care system. We did parental notification laws. We ended partial birth abortion. We did all of this, and we were the first state to do a Choose Life license plate. Now 29 states have done it, and tens of millions of dollars have gone to create a culture where more people, more babies are adopted.
Did you know?
No, I didn't know, but it doesn't matter. I was working on this board because of the issue. It's clear.
So of course, ignorance of the issue doesn't matter as long as you're a Republican.
I'm completely correct. And I believe that we should have a culture of life. It's informed by my faith from beginning to end. And I did this not just as it related to unborn babies. I did it at the end of life issues as well. This is something that goes way beyond politics. And I hope one day that we get to the point where we respect life in its fullest form across the board.
You only respect life until you have to pay for it.
A rape and incest exception to abortion bans. Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York just said yesterday those exceptions are preposterous. He said they discriminate against an entire class of human beings. If you believe that life begins at conception, as you say you do, how do you justify ending a life just because it begins violently through no fault of the baby?
Well, Megan, first of all, I'm not sure that that's a correct assessment of my record. I would go on to add that I believe all
humans. You don't favor a rape and an incest exception.
I have never said that, and I have never advocated that. What I have advocated is...
Yes, he is. Let me look it up.
...human life at every stage of its development is worthy of protection. In fact, I think that law already exists. It's called the Constitution of the United States. And let me go further.
Wow.
That every single human being is entitled to the protection of our laws, whether they can vote or not, whether they can speak or not, whether they can hire a lawyer or not, whether they have a birth certificate or not. And I think future generations will look back at this history of our country and call us barbarians for murdering millions of babies who we never gave them a chance to live.
Mr. Trump.
Unless they're terrorist babies, then we don't care.
Supporting partial birth abortion. You favored an assault weapons ban as well. In 2004, you said in most cases you...
Okay. I feel that we need to address the partial birth abortion thing. Now, that is always done past the term of 20 weeks. That's always done that way, because that otherwise it wouldn't be a partial birth, because technically it wouldn't be something that would even resemble being a fetus.
Yeah.
Because as you go, you're developing from a cell that has divided and divided and divided and divided. At some point, then you end up being a blastocyst. No one is ever going to say, if they're shown, here's a blastocyst. Do you know what a blastocyst is? This is a prehuman.
Yeah. If you were to show people...
Going, it'd be human. Do you really think that this has a soul? That's the question. So all these people that think that life begins at conception are simply deluded. Because they have no concept of that.
They also have no concept of cognition. Yeah. Because if you were to be shown a picture of something at that stage, you would not recognize it as a living creature.
Yeah, especially elephants. Yeah. You see an elephant fetus?
They're so weird looking. They
look an awful lot like a human fetus, don't they?
Yeah, they're weird looking.
Yeah, at a certain point, yeah. Fetuses
look alien.
Well,
oh my god,
If a person's being is actually stored in their soul, there'd be no reason for a brain.
Right.
Yeah, but I had a direct refutation of his, you know, I've never supported, you know, whatever it is that he said he didn't support. You know, he's screwing with his words here. Because he has never explicitly stated any of these things that he's being were stated by the proctor. However, he has voted for them. And if your actions speak louder than your words, then by voting for these things, you've shown you do support them.
Right.
And I'm trying to look up these specific examples because I don't remember them, but I can't seem to find them. I know they exist. I had them just a minute ago.
Well, let's carry on and let it go. And should you find it, then we will we'll recap. So this is Donald Trump on the whole Planned Parenthood thing.
Identified.
Hold on to your butts.
Even in this campaign, your critics say you often sound more like a Democrat than a Republican, calling several of your opponents on this stage things like clowns and puppets. When did you actually become a Republican?
I don't think they like me very much. I'll tell you what, I've evolved on many issues over the years, and you know who else has is Ronald Reagan evolved on many issues.
Drink.
My life. And if you look at the question, I was in business, they asked me a question as to pro-life or choice, and I said, if you let it run, that I hate the concept of abortion. I hate the concept of abortion. And then since then, I've very much evolved. And what happened is friends of mine years ago were going to have a child and it was going to be aborted and it wasn't aborted. And that child today is a total superstar, a great, great child. And I saw that and I saw other instances. And I am very, very proud to say that I am pro-life. As far as being a Republican is concerned, I come from a place, New York City, which is virtually, I mean, it's almost exclusively Democrat. And I have restarted to
say New York, sir.
As an example, and I have a lot of liking for this man, but the last number of months of his brother's administration were a catastrophe, and unfortunately those few months gave us President Obama, and you can't be happy about that.
On the subject of name-calling of your fellow candidates, a story appeared today quoting an anonymous GOP donor who said you called Mr. Trump a clown, a buffoon, something else that cannot be repeated on television.
None of which is
true. Is it true?
No, it's not true. But I have said that Mr. Trump's language is divisive. I want to win. I want one of these people here, or the ones at 5 o'clock, to be the next president of the United States. We're not going to win by doing what Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton do each and every day, dividing the country, creating a grievance kind of environment. We're going to win when we unite people with a hopeful, optimistic message. I have that message because I was a governor of a state that saw people lifted up because we had high, sustained economic growth. Our economy grew at double the rate of the nation. We created 1.8 million jobs. We led the nation for those 8 years. We were only.
Wait, who is this?
Went to AAA bond ratings.
Jeb Bush.
Oh, no. Pause it.
It's Jeb Bush. Yes, what? About the.
He created 1.3 million jobs while during his term from 1999 to 2007. That's true. However, comma, 900,000 of those jobs were gone by December of 2009. He did not create sustainable economic growth. He created growth that would last just long enough to look good for him while he was in office, and then it collapsed.
I see. Well, that's fun, and those are definitely part of the, you know, you need to do your due diligence on this kind of thing.
Yes. Educate yourselves.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's no different than Rick Scott saying, I added more money to education than any other governor in the country, which is true if you don't compare it to the rest of his frickin' administration, where he only added back an eighth of the money that he took away from education.
Exactly.
From the state.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can say a lot of things that sound good, but when you look at the actual numbers, it doesn't hold up.
Okay, let's carry on with that. Otherwise, we're never going to get done.
I cut taxes $19 billion. If you do that and apply conservative principles the right way, you create an environment where everybody rises up. That's how we're going to win. Campaigning in places to give people hope that their life is better because too many people are suffering today in America.
Mr. Chop, 30 seconds.
Well, first of all, Jeff, I am very happy that you denied that, and I appreciate that very much. I mean, he's a true gentleman. He really is. The one thing he did say about, and I mean that, the one thing he did say about me, however, was my tone, and I also understand that. But when you have people that are cutting Christians' heads off, when you have a world at the border and at so many places that it's medieval times, we've never, it's almost got to be as bad as it ever was in terms of the violence and the horror. We don't have time. We have to go out and get the job.
Not even close.
Florida's, I would also like to point out that despite the growth that that Jeb was harping on, Florida's unemployment rate is still 5.5, which is you know, still really high. The lowest unemployment
rate in the country.
Yeah, the lowest unemployment rate in the country is 2%.
They did things in feudal times that would make the hardest of the terrorists in this world today go, son of a bitch, lighten up.
Yeah.
I mean, be chill, bro.
This happened as far back as World War II. We briefly touched on Hiroshima earlier, and I'm going to touch on it for a different reason now, you know, because there's a lot of people are, you know, demonizing America for dropping the bomb on Japan. The Empire of Japan committed horrific war crimes. Prisoners of war were tied to posts in training facilities, and as a final test for Japanese infantry, they had to charge up and stab them to death with bayonets. That was a thing that happened. It is documented and proven that this is a fact. That's a fucking war crime. That's atrocious. So, you know, there are reasons that we dropped the bomb on Japan, because they did horrible, horrible things. And this was in the 1940s. This was not medieval times. This was decades ago. You know, horrific things have happened in recent history that, again, pale in comparison to what's going on right now.
Oh my God, dude, the things that humanity used to do to each other.
Drawing and quartering. That's all I'm going to say. Drawing and quartering.
We have not exactly been nice to each other.
Nice to each other, but getting your head cut off is probably one of the better ways to go.
I'd much rather be decapitated than, say, disemboweled.
I have to go with, if you're going to execute me, the guillotine is probably the quickest way.
Absolutely. I'm over in a tick. As opposed to, you know, being put on a rack and having your intestines pulled out and attached to essentially a barbecue spit, and they spin it until you die.
I'm not.
Ugh.
Okay, so speaking of that, let's move on to the rest of what Donald's saying.
Jesus,
that's not a great segue.
Yeah. But as far as historical context, this is the worst it's ever been.
No,
you don't know your history.
Not the worst.
That is not the worst it's ever been.
Yeah.
We are pretty far from that point.
Those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. We have learned from history. We know what the worst is, and thankfully, we are nowhere close. Let's carry on with something that's near close, and that would be the GOP primary.
I think there's some Geneva Convention laws being broken here.
It is torture watching these guys.
It's not torture because we have beverage.
That there is that. Thank we God for alcohol.
We have
probably like a loophole in the law. This, the inspectors would come up and be like, "You boys,
delicious loophole.
Oh, you have this alcohol."
This is anesthetic, people.
Delicious loophole.
Also, should anyone be curious out there, I'm fairly drunk. And at this point, this is what you get. Enjoy. Yeah.
If you had a son or daughter who was gay or lesbian, how would you say to them your opposition to same-sex marriage?
Well, look, I'm an old-fashioned person here, and I happen to believe in traditional marriage. But I've also said the court has ruled.
But how would you explain to your child?
Megan, the court has ruled, and I said we'll accept it. And guess what? I just went to a wedding of a friend of mine who happens to be gay. Because somebody doesn't think the way I do doesn't mean that I can't care about them or I can't love them. So if one
I look at the expression on this guy's face and I see that this is a line that his PR director is forcing him to say. Like every word he utters, it just seems like he is like holding back from retching saying this sentence.
I don't think so. I don't think so. In this particular case, I think this is genuine.
With this particular candidate, I'd say this is probably genuine.
He's more animated in this than he was in a whole lot of other things.
But see, that's why I think it's a force-fed line. He's overcompensating to make it look good, but it just comes off as fake to me.
I don't give them that much credit.
But this guy's this is among the more aggressive of the bunch.
Yeah, I really like actually what he has to say. So I got a little bit of this one out on the Facebook lands right before this. So I got a little here. So let's listen to what he says.
Would accept them because you know what? That's what we're taught when we have strong faith. So issues like that are planted to divide us. I think the simple fact of the matter is, and this is where I would agree with Jeb, and I've been saying it all along, we need to give everybody a chance, treat everybody with respect, and let them share in this great American dream that we have, Megan. So, look, I'm going to love my daughters. I'm going to love them no matter what they do, because you know what? God gives me unconditional love. I'm going to give it to my family and my friends and the people around me.
Holy shit, someone actually practicing good Christian values.
If it's a line, it's a good line.
Yeah, it's a good line, but I still think it's a fucking line. I don't believe him for a second.
I don't know. I think he's genuine.
I believe he's genuine. He feels genuine to me.
Nope.
And I'm still not going to vote.
As the only theist in the room, I don't fucking believe that shit for a second.
Isn't that funny? The one that believes...
The one that believes and examines the text from the position of a believer doesn't believe his bullshit.
That's interesting. So
that's saying something.
Take that for what you will. Take that for what you will.
In the wake of the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage, Carol Fox on Facebook wants to know the following. Quote, what will you do to ensure Christians are not prosecuted for speaking out against gay marriage? And will Christians be forced to conduct business?
Let you drink on this one.
With their religious beliefs.
Look, I don't want my marriage or my guns registered in Washington.
Yep, I'm drinking.
Oh, my God.
And if people have an opinion, it's a religious opinion that is heartfully felt, obviously they should be allowed to practice that, and no government should interfere with that. One of the things that really got to me was the thing in Houston where you had the government, the mayor, actually trying to get the sermons of ministers. When the government tries to invade the church to enforce its own opinion on marriage, that's when it's time to resist.
I've never heard of a single story of a government official going into a church for any reason.
Well, that would be breaking the separation of church and state.
Exactly. We just want you to keep your religion out of, you know, public office and business.
We won't tell you how to arrange your religion as long as you don't tell us how to arrange our government.
Exactly.
Done. Not a hard concept.
This is not a difficult concept.
No.
Why are we having this discussion?
We've had this conversation so many times.
Loud noises.
Oh my God.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Okay, here we go. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
In the Black Lives Matter movement and beyond, believe.
Oh.
Did we say Black Lives Matter was a shot?
No, it's if one of them responds with All Lives Matter.
Oh, okay. Let's see what happens.
Wait, I need my alcohol.
Right.
Prep it. Yeah.
I'm just grabbing the bottle.
That overly aggressive police officers targeting young African Americans is the civil rights issue of our time. Do you agree? And if so, how do you plan to address it? If not, why not?
Well, I think the most important thing we can do when it comes to policing is something you've had a guest on who's a friend of mine, Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, who's talked to me many times about this in the past. It's about training. It's about making sure that law enforcement professionals, not only on the way in to their positions, but all the way through their time, have the proper training, particularly when it comes to use of force, and that we protect and stand up and support those men and women who are doing their jobs in law enforcement. And for the very few that don't, that there are consequences to show that we treat everyone the same here in America.
Thank you.
All right, so
the core of our debate, including...
He's got good speechwriters.
Obama's foreign policy...
But $900 million will buy that.
Yes. Coming up, right?
Foreign policy. Candidates, you...
Okay. We are at the halfway point now.
Wow.
Now, most of that is our fault for doing side...
the side drunker we get, the more we ramble.
It's true. And this is the epic, super long show with alcohol that I'm not sure that anyone has actually ever wanted, but this is what you're going to get. So I hope you like it. I think I've decided that I'm going to just release all these at once.
Yeah.
Especially since I've had two computer crashes during this whole thing, all I've got is the YouTube video, so I'm going to be stripping the audio out of it. I'm not going to be editing this tonight. I'm going to rip the audio, I'm going to rip the video back out from YouTube so that they can't necessarily kill it from Fox, and then I can repost it. Because then they can't control it. So with that, let's see what they have for the next half. The last technical quarter of this epic long thing that we're doing.
You may not have seen the late developing news today. Fox Pentagon team broke earlier this evening about a top Iranian general traveling to Moscow to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin. His name is General Qasem Soleimani. He's blamed for hundreds of U.S. troops' deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan. His trip to Russia appears to directly violate U.N. Security Council resolutions to confine him to Iran. So, Mr. Trump, if you were president, how would you respond to this?
I would be so different from what you have right now, like the polar opposite. We have a president who doesn't have a clue. I would say he's incompetent, but I don't want to do that because that's not nice. But if you look at the deals we make, whether it's the nuclear deal with 24-hour periods, and by the way, before you get to the 24 hours, you have to go through a system. You look at Sergeant Bergdahl. We get Bergdahl, a traitor, and they get five of the big, great killers, leaders that they want. We have people in Washington that don't know what they're doing. Now, I agree. Now, with Iran, we're making a deal. You would say, we want him. We want him. We want our prisoners. We want all these things. We don't get anything. We're giving them $150 billion plus. They are going to be, I'll tell you what, if Iran was a stock, you folks should go out and buy it right now because you'll quadruple. This, what's happened in Iran, is a disgrace, and it's going to lead to destruction in large portions of the world.
A
Another new development today. Senior defense officials tell Fox they strongly suspect Russia was behind a cyber attack on the chairman of the Joint Chiefs office. This comes in the wake of the Director of National Intelligence blaming the Chinese for the largest ever cyber attack, stealing personal data of tens of millions of Americans. Senator Cruz, in your view, have Russia and China committed acts of cyber war?
Okay, I got to pause. I was obviously missing, because as soon as I hit play, my computer crashed.
Wow.
So what did I just miss?
Trump is on the warpath.
Yeah, it was Trump talking about how bad the deal with Iran is and how we need to make it go away again. Because obviously what we need is more war.
Oh.
That's all it was. It was just another more war segment. Okay. And now they're moving on to digital terror attacks from China, and which, you know, and when Russia. Did that happen?
Oh, it's just been a consistently happening thing, actually. So, okay. All right. Then play.
And if you were president, what would you do about it?
Well, Brett, of course they have. And over the last 6.5 years, we've seen the consequences of the Obama-Clinton foreign policy. Leading from behind is a disaster. We have abandoned and alienated our friends and allies, and our enemies are stronger. Radical Islam is on the rise. Iran's on the verge of acquiring a nuclear...
Radical Islam, drink.
...waging cyber warfare against America. Russia, General Soleimani, you just mentioned, the Iranian general, is the head of the Al-Quds forces. He's directly responsible for the murder of over 500 American servicemen in Iraq. And part of this Iranian deal was lifting the international sanctions on General Soleimani. The day General Soleimani flew back from Moscow to Iran was the day we believed that Russia used cyber warfare against the Joint Chiefs. We need a new commander in chief that will stand up to our enemies and that will have credibility. It is worth emphasizing that Iran released our hostages in 1981, the day Ronald Reagan was sworn into office.
Ronald Reagan.
August of 2012, President Obama famously declared that if Syrian President Bashar al-Assad used chemical weapons, that's a red line for us, and that there would be enormous consequences. 1 year later, with overwhelming evidence that Assad had in fact used chemical weapons and crossed that red line, President Obama declined to use military force against the Assad regime. As president, would you have used military force there? Well, what we have to...
What overwhelming evidence? I never saw any overwhelming evidence, and I was watching that fairly closely.
To such an extent that it affects all of our military policies. Our Navy is at its smallest size since 1917, our Air Force since 1940. In recent testimony, the Commandant of the Marine Corps said half of the non-deployed units were not ready. And, you know, the sequester is cutting the heart out of our personnel. Our generals are retiring because they don't want to be part of this. And at the same time...
No, they're retiring because there's a limit on how long you can be in the military. As soon as you hit 30 years, you're out.
Yeah. Ukraine was a nuclear...
That's a hard limit.
Give away their nuclear arms with the understanding that we would protect them. We won't even give them offensive weapons. You know, we turned our back on Israel, our ally. You know... And in a situation like that, of course Obama's not going to be able to do anything. I would shore up our military first, because if you don't get the military right, nothing else is going to work.
Governor Walker.
They keep harping on the military, the military, the military. We spend more on the military than every other part of the government combined.
Well, sure, but wait a second. He actually just said that Obama couldn't help but do the thing that he did. He basically stood up for our president. First time. First time during this debate.
No, but do you see, even that, I still can't say I support. Because these people are little devils.
Well, I can't
everything they say,
that.
even the absolute truths that they speak are spoken in ultimate deceit.
That sounds awfully biblical of you, Mike.
But in this situation, you know, he's supporting President Obama and saying he couldn't help but do what he did, because the backdrop of that, the assumption of that, is that, you know, the administration laid down by Clinton, another Democrat, which was mentioned by name earlier, set up this situation where the president is impotent. So it's still the Democrats' fault.
Okay, I see where you're coming from on that. Yeah, I got to go with it. Okay, all right, carry on.
What would you do if Russian President Vladimir Putin started a campaign to destabilize NATO allies, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, mirroring the actions Putin took at the early days of Ukraine?
Well, first off, for the cyber attack with Russia the other day, it's sad to...
I'm part Lithuanian, by the way. Just thought I'd mention that.
My whole thing on Russia, and this is really quick, is that the reason that they can threaten the Ukraine is because the Ukraine is in the economic shithole that they're in. Russia has no goddamn money. They've got tons of military hardware lying around broken because they can't afford to fix it. They're selling off their ships like hotcakes because they can't afford to run their government. Russia is not a real threat to anyone who has actual economic power.
It's true, which is why they're doing the saber rattling to try and give themselves some sort of credibility.
And one of two things is happening. Either the Republicans are falling for the lie, which makes them morons, or they are intentionally backing the lie, which makes them traitors.
Yeah, either or. David, what did you say? I couldn't catch it.
Just a minute ago?
Yes.
I've already lost it.
Okay.
All right.
Just
now, but probably the Russian and Chinese government know more about Hillary Clinton's email server than do the members of the United States. And put our national security at risk. If I'm president, he won't think about that. You know, Putin believes in the old Lenin adage that you probe with bayonets. When you find mush, push. When you find steel, you stop. Under Obama and Clinton, we found a lot of mush over the last few years. We need to have a national security that puts steel in front of our enemy.
Skywalker, when you find mush, push.
Giggity?
You know, Giggity Worms is obviously a dude who has absolutely no clue about cybersecurity.
None.
Oh,
none.
Just
when you find mush, push.
That should be a mush, push.
It really ought to be.
Work with NATO to put forces on the eastern border of Poland and the Baltic nations, and I would put in place back in the missile defense system that we had in Poland and in the Czech Republic.
Governor,
we find steel.
Oh, because that'll help us with cybersecurity.
Yeah, how does that relate to anything? Also, did those systems not work upon review?
I want to play Axis and Allies with these guys, see what they
right?
do. Because they really have no
they will
they would lose.
What do we do
so
now, Scott Walker?
Bad.
We die.
Nice. Oh my gosh, last Starfighter reference. Not that bad. Not bad. Okay.
You got to have the little eye thing.
Actually, okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is currently 2:49 a.m. in the Eastern Time Zone in the United States of America, and we still have two viewers.
Who are you?
We still have two viewers. I don't know who you are, but I love you. I just want to say, okay, I love you very much.
I'm proud.
Much
of the two dedicated viewers out there.
We are two-thirds of the way.
You guys are.
Two-thirds of the way through our final segment, and then I will release you from your burden.
We will release ourselves from this torment.
Yes. The only thing that's getting me through this, I really hope that you all are drinking as well. Okay, moving on.
What ring of hell is this?
Now, Defense Secretary Ashton Carter recently directed the military to prepare for a moment when it is welcoming transgender persons to serve openly. As Commander-in-Chief, how would you handle that?
The military is not a social experiment. The purpose of the military is kill people and break things. It's not to trans...
Kill people and break things.
Well, yes, okay. That's true. So
That's a totally pro-life statement, right?
No,
there.
But if that is the case, and it is true, because that's what a military is for, it's to fight. That's a fact. If that is true, then social issues should not matter. Then it should not matter if people are openly gay or transsexual or whatever, because that's not what they're there for.
Yeah.
But you'd rather everyone stay in the closet and be persecuted.
Yeah.
Any way you look at it, you're a douchebag.
That's amazing. Okay. Here we go.
Transform the culture by trying out some ideas that some people think would make us a different country and more diverse. The purpose is to protect America. I'm not sure how paying for transgender surgery for soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines makes our country safer. We've reduced the military by 25% under President Obama. The disaster is that we've forgotten why we have a military. The purpose of
we still have the biggest military in the world.
I think he may have forgotten humanity, and that having someone that is comfortable as themselves is then capable of doing amazing things.
Yeah, from a purely logical, purely cold, emotionless logic standpoint, it is still worthwhile to pay for that gender reassignment surgery, because if they are more comfortable in their body, then they are less distracted, which makes them more effective combatants.
Absolutely. If they are competent in a particular way, because the people that would be doing this kind of thing, they probably wouldn't be the grunts. In all honesty, they probably wouldn't be, because they'd be out on the field, they'd be doing things that transition takes time.
Yeah.
You know, of course, it depends on what level of transition you want to go with. There's a whole there's another podcast that I highly recommend anybody that's interested in the topic to hit, and that would be called The Gaytheist Manifesto with Callie Wright. It's a fantastic show, and she really does a great job at the whole ally thing with those that are in the transgender community.
Sorry.
You can't control what's going on around you. I'm just like, is that me? It's like, where is that? Where is that coming from? Okay.
I'm surprised it wasn't me.
No fuzz here. It's all good. Okay. All right. No emergencies. We're all cool here. Okay.
They found me, Marty.
I don't know how they found me, but they found me. The Libyans! No. Totally different. Totally different thing. As far as the transgender thing, which is what the topic is here. Yes, if somebody is, say they're in national security, say they're dealing with top secret documents, if you give them the gender reassignment surgery under the auspices of Obamacare, let's just go with that, because it's something that's the law of the land, as they'd like to point out. At that point, you have someone that has now become what has fulfilled them. It has then taken away something that was a burden from them. It has freed them mentally to pursue that which you want them to do, which is their job to the fullest extent of their ability.
Yeah, the thing that these guys constantly forget, and dear Lord, these guys need to go back and read Book of the Five Rings and Sun Tzu's The Art of War and all of those, you know, the actual military masters of the world. And those are not long books. They're really easy reads.
No, Sun Tzu's The Art of War is actually quite short.
It's short and to the point. Yeah. I've got a copy over here, and it is...
It's quite succinct. I mean, it's written on reeds. Yeah,
it's tiny.
Yeah, it's maybe he's showing a hardbound book for those of you that are in audio.
It is less than a
hardbound book
thick.
That's a centimeter thick. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a short, quick, easy read, and one of the primary principles of warfare is morale. Mm-hmm. If your soldiers do not have high morale, they are not effective. And what is the best way to help someone who, you know, feels trapped in their own body to raise their morale? Give them the gender reassignment surgery that they need.
Right.
Boosts morale, makes them a more effective soldier. Simple principle.
And we're not, You know, we're not talking about 50% of the military here.
We're talking like 1% of 1%.
1%.
Yeah.
If that. We're not talking, this isn't mass numbers here. We're not going to line up an entire division of the military and go,
I would be very curious to figure out what kind of demographics we're working with. I really would be curious to figure that out. I don't have any idea, but I do have a niggling idea in my head that though the percentage is small, that percentage matters.
Every percentage matters in warfare. Especially in warfare.
The percentage of people that I consider that would be going through such a reassignment kind of ordeal, because really that's what it is an ordeal. I would consider that they would probably be in a particular segment of the population, perhaps in the national security kind of arena. I may be completely wrong. And in many cases, I probably am. And that's perfectly fine as well.
But really,
regardless, those people have something to bring to bear for the betterment of the entire platoon, the entire regiment, whatever division they happen to be in, they will be a better soldier.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where they are or how many of them there are, because any commander worth his salt will tell you that every soldier on the line matters.
Yeah.
One weak link can bring down an entire unit.
Well, I will say that any that knows what he's doing, there are some out there that are simply too blinded by their own bigotry to see the value of a person beyond what is at the surface level.
Well, those
but
people
then it's
shouldn't,
not a good commander.
Yeah, those people shouldn't be in positions of command anyway. Because,
no,
again, that's not what they're there for. The military is there to kill and destroy.
Let's get this video over with.
Okay. Carry on. Yeah. Thank you for keeping me on task.
Is to make sure that we protect every American wherever that American is. And if an American is calling out for help, whether it's in Benghazi or at the border.
Benghazi, Drake.
Able to answer it. We've not done that because we've decimated our military. We're flying B-52s, the most recent one that was put in service was November of 1962. A lot of the B-52s we're flying, we've only got 44 that are in service, combat ready. And the fact is, most of them are older than me. And that's pretty scary.
And who are we carpet bombing?
Except that we need a B-52 for.
You proposed as senator
problem, obviously.
Financial aid to Israel. You have since changed your view on that issue. What made you change your mind?
Well, let's be clear. I'm the only one on the stage who actually has a five-year budget that balances. I've put pencil to paper, and I've said I would cut spending, and I've said exactly where. Each one of my budgets has taken a meat axe to foreign aid because I think we ought to quit sending it to countries that hate us. I think we ought to quit sending it.
For those of you at home, Trump is looking at him like he has three heads. Trump just kind of looked at him like, what the fuck are you talking about?
The countries that burn our flag. Israel's not one of those. But even Benjamin Netanyahu said that ultimately they will be stronger when they're independent. My position is exactly the same. We shouldn't borrow money from China to send it anywhere, but why don't we start with eliminating aid to our enemies?
Okay, but you still say that Israel could be one of the countries that is cut from financial aid.
I still say exactly what my original opinion is. Do you borrow money from China to send it to anyone? Out of your surplus, you can help your allies, and Israel is a great ally, and this is no particular animus of Israel. But what I will say, and I will say over and over again, we cannot give away money we don't have. We do not project power from bankruptcy court. We're borrowing $1 million a minute. It's got to stop somewhere.
Governor Christie, what do you...
Okay. I agree.
I agree that we should not borrow anymore. However, he's missing the point that we're not actually borrowing completely from China. We're borrowing from the American people. The American people hold the burden of the national debt. Not sure if you knew that or not out there in internet land. Yeah.
It goes back to this thing back from the World Wars. from the Great War and from World War II, there was a thing called war bonds. And what a war bond was you go to a bank or a government office or wherever they were selling them, and you buy a war bond. And all a war bond was an IOU.
Yeah.
You say, I'm giving the government money to fund the war, and someday in the future, I'm going to cash it in to get my money back. The problem with that is that the American government has never paid back their war bonds. And it's the same – we don't have war bonds anymore, but it's the same principle. Yeah. They're borrowing from us.
It's essentially – it's still a treasury bond, basically.
Yeah, they're borrowing from us and never paying us back.
Yeah. Well, we certainly don't get quite the interest rate that we would like from other investments and things like that on it. But, yeah, that's basically where they're being sold. They're being sold to the American people. Really – debt in general is, it's funny money. You know, as I was trying to allude to earlier, when the rubber hits the road, money doesn't matter. It really doesn't. When you absolutely are fighting for survival, you will just do it. Everyone will get fed because everyone has to get fed to continue the war effort. It just has to happen. Things have to happen when you're right at that crucial point.
Yeah, but the problem with the wars of modern times.
We need to get this thing done, man.
The problem with the wars of modern times is that we are not at those crucial points. This is not a life or death situation. These powers are not the Axis powers.
That's true.
This is not a world war. This is a bunch of bullshit cocked up by a bunch of businessmen to sell guns.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay. We'll carry on.
Look at that answer. Oh, listen. You know, if we want to deal with these issues, we have to deal with them in a way that makes sense. I agree with what Dr. Carson said earlier. The first thing we need to do to make America stronger is to strengthen our military. And I put out a really specific plan. No less than 500,000 active duty soldiers in the Army. No less than 185,000 active duty Marines in the Marine Corps. Bring us to a 350-ship Navy again and modernize the Ohio class of submarines and bring our Air Force back to 2,600 aircraft that are ready to go. Those are the kind of...
Message. You know why we haven't modernized the Ohio-class submarine? Because we don't need to. It's still the best submarine in the world.
I was actually just wondering about the Ohio-class in particular. So what's the difference with just the Ohio-class?
It's the oldest class of submarine in existence. But here's the thing.
In our Navy.
It still leaps and bounds above the capabilities of anything else in the world. The reason we haven't quote unquote modernized our military is because we don't have to. If the ship can still run, it's the best ship in the world. The reason that we're starting to build new carriers is because the old carriers are reaching the end of their lifespan. The Enterprise especially.
The mobile
Chernobyl especially. They need to be retired because the reactors don't work anymore. That's it. Everything else about them is fine.
Right.
So this idea that we need to modernize our military is fucking stupid. It's still the most powerful military in the world.
Just keep it up to date. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the problem. The Ohio class is a class.
There's no one left for them to fight.
Yeah. The Ohio class is a class of nuclear powered submarine used by the United States Navy. The Navy has 18 Ohio class submarines, 14 ballistic missile submarines, the SSBN variety, and 4 that were later converted to guided missile submarines, the SSGN. They were built from 1976 to 1997, which, by the way, was the year I graduated high school. They are currently still in commission. There were a planned 24 of them. 18 were completed, 6 were canceled, and there are still 18 that are currently active. I know that I toured a Nebraska-class boomer. And they are considerably large submarines.
Boomers are bigger than anything else.
Yeah. Well, the Ohio class is it's at least nuclear powered.
Mm-hmm. They're all nuclear powered.
It is a ballistic missile submarine, which means it is a boomer. So they're big. At least, you know, it depends on how many they have, I suppose. How many ballistic missile submarines?
Let me put it this way. Let me put it this way. Having been on the inside, because I was, the exact capabilities of any strategic asset, any ballistic missile submarine, is classified. However, I can say with certainty that a single one can end the world. I'm not allowed to tell you the exact number of warheads on board or anything like that, but one of them can end the world. And we've got 14 of them.
What more do you need?
That's all you need to know.
What more do you need? And we have a lot of these.
Yeah. They can end the world. They're practically invisible. You'll never find them. And you
better believe that one's off the coast of Iran.
Yeah. And we've got way more of them than we need.
Yeah.
And they'll keep going for another 10, 20 years.
Yeah. When I toured the USS Nebraska itself, which was the head of its class, as it were, that was in 1996. So it's an older submarine, but I'm pretty sure it's still in service. I could look it up. But that particular
If you were allowed to tour it, it's not in service anymore.
No, I toured it while it was in active duty.
It may have been quote-unquote in active duty, but it wasn't actually in use because a boomer is super classified.
No,
you were allowed to see.
It was still in use, I swear.
It wasn't still in use for its original purpose. There's just no way.
I don't think that you're correct in that, but we will digress on that.
You would never have been allowed to see the inside of a boomer.
Yes.
They're super classified. If it was still in use, you wouldn't be allowed to see what was inside.
I've seen shit that was super classified.
No, you saw shit that was super classified in the past.
No, I saw shit that was in development.
Okay.
But
the USS Nebraska.
We're going to leave that one alive.
The USS Nebraska was ordered May 26, 1997. The
exceptions are made.
Builder, General Dynamics, laid down July 1987, launched August 1992. It was commissioned in 1993, and it is still in service, sir. So, yes, I did tour it. Yes, it was in active duty. Yes, it was in Port Cape Canaveral, and I toured it as part of a – I can't remember what service I was part of, but it was also being toured by the Boy Scouts. So it was something that was being done at the time. Regardless, it did have nukes on board at the time. So, be that as it may, that particular ship was quite impressive. And if I missed count, it had at least 10 ballistic missile bays on hatches on the top, just from observation. And each one of those is, of course, a multiple ballistic. Anyway, we know where it goes from there. One of those can certainly, as you said, end the world. So, let's carry on.
It doesn't take many nuclear detonations to do that, from what I understand.
It takes more than the alarmists want you to think, but...
Isn't it something like 19?
No, it's more than that, but it's still... Isn't
end the world kind of a bunny-eared thing?
Well, the thing is that when they classify ending the world, they mean that you have had enough detonations that have thrown enough crap into the atmosphere and spread enough radiation across the planet that I think it's more than 90% of life is doomed. That's an end of the world scenario. You kill off 90% of life.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to happen right away. That's the other thing.
Yeah. And we have a lot of submarines.
Yeah.
Just to let you guys know out there in TV land and internet landia that we have a lot of these, and they're where we need them to be.
Yes, they are.
Anytime.
And they're not the only nuclear launch platforms that we have.
Right. We've also got the silos, and honestly, I think even carriers can launch nuclear-laden missiles.
A carrier
there are Tomahawk missiles that can carry a nuclear payload.
a carrier can carry a bomber that is capable of dropping a nuclear payload. Officially, there are no nuclear payloads aboard carriers.
Officially.
Officially.
At the time of your
at the time of my discharge in 2009, officially, there were no nuclear capabilities aboard carriers.
So
they didn't say anything about destroyers, though.
Oh, no, no. We're not talking about destroyers.
We're not talking about missile destroyers. No, no, no. We're not talking about those.
We're not talking about any of those special other boats that we have in service at all times.
Yeah.
In all parts of the world. We have quite the sizable Navy fleet, my friends.
We can wreck some shit.
Let's not pussyfoot around this. We are well armed. If anybody really wants to pick a fight with America, that's a mistake. Seriously, it's a mistake.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
If a nuke ever came near America, American soil, and it was fired from a foreign power, that power would pretty much cease to exist.
Yep.
We would make that happen.
In what? Do you think 45 minutes?
You less than that. You've inserted the key into Pandora's box.
Yeah.
As a prize, you get annihilation.
At the time that that particular government's leader hits launch, they have roughly an hour to make peace with the world.
Oh, way less than that.
That's
assuming that our only response is from silo-launched intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Which, if we have
a carrier, or if we have a boomer parked off their coast, they have like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
As I understand it, the missile silo program was largely abandoned after the launching of the first nuclear missile sub.
Because the subs were actually cheaper to maintain. Yes.
The subs were actually cheaper to maintain, were better protected, and harder to neutralize.
See, here's the thing about the silo program. A lot of the silos were in the heartland. We just scattered silos everywhere to make it harder for enemies to eliminate those targets. But silos in the heartland mean that their missiles have farther to travel to hit their targets. So those silos were decommissioned. We still have silos.
I kind of want a silo, just as one of those things that...
Yeah, and you can buy them and live in them.
Yeah, I kind of want to. Okay, moving on.
They sold them on eBay, honestly.
Things working on immediately to make our country stronger and make it better. Those are the things that we need to be able to be doing. And as we move towards dealing with foreign aid, I don't disagree with Senator Paul's position that we shouldn't be funding our enemies, but I absolutely believe that Israel is a priority to be able to fund and keep them strong and safe after 8 years of this administration.
Governor, thank you.
Brett, can I jump in on this one?
Senator, we're going to finish up with some more questions. Thank you.
We have to stand you by because after the break, we're going to let the candidates make their closing statements, their final thoughts, and God. Stay tuned for that.
We're getting into religious freedom, and I'm out of alcohol.
Oh, Lord.
Last quarter.
Oh, moments here together. We're going to allow the candidates to offer their final thoughts. But first, we want to ask them an interesting closing question from Chase Norton on Facebook, who wants to know this of the candidates. I want to know if any of them have received a word from God on what they should do and take care of first. Senator Cruz, any word from God?
Well, I am blessed to receive a word from God every day and receiving the scriptures and reading the scriptures, and God speaks through the Bible.
Oh, my God.
The son of a pastor and an evangelist, and I've described many times how my father, when I was a child...
Yes. Just continue with the Christian circle jerk, please.
And left me when I was just 3 years old, and someone invited him to play for a Baptist church, and he gave his heart to Jesus and turned him around.
Furious masturbation. That's all this is.
I would also know them by their fruits. We see lots of campaign conservatives, but if we're going to win in 2016, we need a consistent conservative, someone who's been a fiscal conservative, a social conservative, a national security conservative. They're real differences.
That's not going to win.
on issues like amnesty, like Obamacare, like religious liberty, like life and marriage. And I have been proud to fight and stand for religious liberty, to stand against Planned Parenthood, to defend life for my entire career. And I will be proud to continue to do so as President of the United States.
Still didn't answer the question.
No, he did not. I think that a fiscal conservative, socially liberal, or progressive, depending on which word you prefer, they're essentially the same thing. That is what actually the country desires. Because we want...
Yeah, because most people are...
We don't want the debt anymore, ever. We never wanted it to begin with. We really don't want to continue wars, because we honestly... If you talk to anybody rationally, they don't want to hurt anybody. And wars hurt people.
Yeah, but a fiscal conservative,
mm-hmm.
conservative in sarcastic air quotes, is not what people want, because people want wealth equality. People want higher minimum wages. People want to be able to, you know, well, support themselves.
That's
and
true.
And a quote-unquote fiscal conservative is going to do nothing but – keep the minimum wage artificially low and give tax breaks to the wealthy. That's what they always do.
Right, but the perception of a fiscal conservative is someone that will balance the budget. That is.
But
the,
see, that's not the reality.
No, it isn't.
Yes, but we need to be accurate with our labels here. The word conservative nowadays does not actually mean what you're talking about.
No, it doesn't.
Because the people who actually want to do that are liberals now. The Democrats want to do that. They want wealth equality. They want to keep money moving. They want to balance the budget.
Which, thank you for basically carrying that into what I was actually getting at, is that those things that the conservatives want have now migrated into the left. Congratulations, everyone. You can be both socially progressive and fiscally conservative within the Democratic Party. Enjoy.
Your training is
complete. You can do this.
Something, something complete.
Something, something. Dark side, something. Democrat.
Okay, moving on, moving on, moving on.
Governor Kasich, same question.
Well, Megan, my father was a mailman. His father was a coal miner. My mother's mother could barely speak English, and their son today stands on this podium in the great state of Ohio, not only as the governor, but a candidate for president of the United States.
You're not a candidate yet.
You know,
I won the primary.
But my elections are really not about campaigns. I tell my people that these are about a movement. And a movement to do what? To restore common sense, a movement to do things like provide economic growth, and a movement not to let anybody be behind. You know, today the country's divided. You asked a question about the police and the difficulty in communities. We've got to unite our country again, because we're stronger when we are united, and we are weaker when we are divided. And we've got to listen to other people's voices, respect them.
Then why do you refuse to ever compromise with the Democrats on anything?
In my lifetime. The Lord's not picking us.
Wrong tribe.
We respect human rights because that we
so that's
are...
That's not uniting the country.
He wants America to be strong. He wants America to succeed, and he wants America to lead. And nothing's more important to me than my family, my faith, and my friends.
Governor Walker, same question.
Well, thanks, Megan. I'm certainly an imperfect man, and it's only by the blood of Jesus Christ that I've been redeemed from my sins. So I know that God doesn't call me to do a specific thing.
Just furious masturbation here. God.
I'm sorry. I literally cannot help.
And all my eyes.
This massive Christian circle jerk is just annoying.
When I had over 100,000 pastors in around our campus. Thing. It wasn't just how
I'd like all the candidates to take your right hand and reach to your right side.
Flashing out, but just being decent going forward and living my life in a way that would be a testimony to him and his faith, and our faith.
Senator Rubio, I want to ask you the same question, but I do want to mention a woman just came here to the stage and asked, what about the veterans? I want to hear more about what these candidates are going to do for our nation's veterans. So I put the question to you about God and the veterans, which you may find to be related.
Well, first let me say, I think God has blessed us. He's blessed the Republican Party with some very good candidates. The Democrats can't even find one.
Are you fucking kidding me? You guys have got 17 people in your clown car. We've got two front runners.
Wow, that's amazing.
Two definitive front runners.
Honored that blessing, and that's why God has continued to bless us.
One's a Jew.
Young men and women willing to risk their lives and sometimes die in uniform for the safety and security of our people. Unfortunately, today,
yeah, because only Republicans go to war. There's no Democrats in the military at all.
We changed the law to give the power to the VA secretary the ability to fire any executive that isn't doing their job. And it is outrageous. They've only fired one.
They didn't fund him, though.
When I'm president of the United States, we're going to have a VA that cares more about our veterans than about the bureaucrats who work at the VA.
Of course, because what we're going to do is we're going to outsource the whole thing.
About God and his role, but also one of the issues that the public was very interested in, and we touched on it earlier, is race relations in the country and how divided we seem right now. And what, if anything, you would do as the next president to help heal that divide?
Well, I think the bully pulpit is a wonderful place to start healing that divide. You know, we have the purveyors of hatred who take every single incident between people of two races and try to make a race war out of it and drive wedges into people. And this does not need to be done. What we need to think about instead, you know, I was asked by an NPR reporter once, why don't I talk about race that often? I said, it's because I'm a neurosurgeon. And she thought that was a strange response. And I said, when I take someone to the operating room, I'm actually operating on the thing that makes them who they are. The skin doesn't make them who they are. The hair doesn't make them who they are. And it's time for us to move beyond that, because, you know, our strength as a nation comes in our unity. We are the United States of America, not the divided states. And those who want to destroy us are trying to divide us, and we shouldn't let them do it.
Thank you.
Now, each candidate will make a closing statement. You'll all have 30 seconds.
Oh, thank God.
Statement for this debate. We'll start with Ohio Governor.
This is going to hurt.
But, you know,
maybe painful.
People want to do. I want to tell you what I've done. I was a member of the Armed Services Committee for 18 years.
Jesus Christ.
It doesn't matter what you've done. We need to know what you plan to do, but you'll never tell us that.
I was the chairman of the House Budget Committee and one of the chief architects the last time we balanced the budget, and it was the first time we'd done it since man walked on the moon. We had a $5 trillion surplus, and we cut taxes. I spent 10 years in the private sector actually learning how business works, and now I'm the governor of Ohio, and I inherited a state that was on the brink of dying. And we've turned it all around with jobs and balanced budgets and rising credit and tax cuts, and the state is unified, and people have hope again in Ohio.
Well, thank you, Megan. Listen, I was born into a middle-class family in New Jersey. My dad came home from serving in the Army after having lost his father, worked in the Breyers ice cream plant in Newark, New Jersey. Was the first to graduate from college, put himself through college at night. My mom was secretary. I was appointed United States Attorney on September 10th, 2001, and spent the next 7 years of my career fighting terrorism.
I didn't ask for your biography. I want to know what you're going to do for this country.
In a state where it's really tough to be both.
You're a lawyer, though. That's nice.
Lots of Democrats, but still we cut taxes. We balanced budgets. We fought the teachers union. This president has had weak leadership, which has led to bad choices. We got to stop worrying about being loved and start worrying about being respected, and that's exactly how I'll lead our country.
Yeah, turn your thumbs up.
Senator Paul, closing statement.
I'm a different kind of Republican.
Fear is not respected.
Your balanced budget, I've introduced the largest tax cut in our history. I stood for 10 and a half hours on the Senate floor to defend your right to be left alone. But I've also
appreciate that.
I've gone to Detroit. I've been to Ferguson. I've been to Baltimore because I want our party to be bigger, better, and bolder. And I'm the only one that leads Hillary Clinton in five states that were won by President Obama. I'm a different kind of Republican.
Because you're a libertarian, not a Republican.
Thank you. You know, both of my parents were born into poor families on the island of Cuba.
Again, with the fucking biographies. Who gives a shit? What are you going to do?
But the very purpose of their life was to give us the chance to do all the things they never could. My father was a bartender. And the journey from the back of that bar to this stage tonight, to me, that's the essence of the American dream. It's what makes our nation different. And I'm running for president because I want that to still be possible for the people trying to do that now.
And how are you going to do that?
Believe that we can't just say American dream. We
haven't been thirsty this tonight.
And change more lives than ever before.
The takeaway here is there is no takeaway here.
Than it's ever been. And make of this century a new American century.
There is nothing here. It's all just hot air.
Yeah, nothing.
If I'm elected president, let me tell you about my first day in office. The first thing I intend to do is end every illegal and unconstitutional executive action taken by Barack Obama. The next thing the Department of Justice to open an investigation, videos, and to prosecute Planned Parenthood for any criminal violations.
And they didn't find anything.
Of justice and the IRS to start persecuting religious liberty. I then intend to cancel the Iran deal and finally move the U.S. embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. My father fled Cuba, and I will fight to defend liberty because my family knows what it's like to lose it.
Dr. Carson, closing statement.
There's nothing there. All he's going to do is take away things. He's not going to build anything.
Great Siamese twins. The only one to operate on babies while they were still in the mother's womb. The only one to take out half of a brain, although you would think if you go to Washington that someone had beat me to it.
Something worth noting. A surgeon is a technician. A doctor is slightly different. So, though he may be a fantastic surgeon, that means he's an excellent technician.
Mm-hmm.
That does not necessarily mean that he has the entire credential as being such an excellent doctor.
The difference.
His title is neurosurgeon.
Yeah, I was pre-med for a while, and I've talked to a lot of doctors, and there's a big difference between surgeons and doctors that this guy seems to be missing. Doctors are the diagnosticians.
Well, they're hoping that everyone else misses it too.
Yeah, doctors are diagnosticians. They figure out what's wrong. They solve the problem. They, in many ways, have way more knowledge than a surgeon does because they can identify patterns and figure out what it all means. All a surgeon does is what he's told.
Yeah.
You need to go in here and you need to take out this person's appendix. It's easy.
I have no desire whatsoever to discredit any of his actual works.
Okay. No, it's not easy.
Nothing like that at all.
I will point out that
a surgeon is a technician.
Yeah, I will take that back. Surgery is not easy.
It's
very difficult. What he does is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got somebody's life in his hands. That's true. But what he does is, however, simple. Because he doesn't have to figure out a problem. All he has to do is go in and cut something out and sew it back up.
Here's the deal.
It's harder.
He could be a brilliant doctor and he could be a brilliant surgeon, and that's all fine and good. That doesn't make him a great leader.
Yeah, that still doesn't make him a great politician. But just when you talk about the leader of a nation,
politician he is. We need a good leader.
But when you talk about someone who's going to be president, you need a problem solver. You need someone who has critical thinking skills, who is intelligent, who can recognize patterns and recognize how to resolve them.
Now, frankly,
a technician doesn't have to think that way.
Not necessarily.
I'd be more confident if you were a doctor.
That's entirely true.
I am a computer technician, as many of you have probably already figured out. And David is also a computer technician.
Yes, but being a computer technician is different from being a surgeon. Surgeons don't do the diagnosing. As a computer technician, you are also a diagnostician. You look at the symptoms and figure out what's wrong.
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't do
tangent.
That.
It is a tangent. As a person, I find that my superpower is that I can correlate things that don't typically go together and find something, a cause that, you know, brings me to a resolution. So I completely respect the ability of a fellow technician to do the same action. So when I'm calling Dr. Ben Carson a technician, that is also a point of respect. It is also a differentiator because he is not a neuroscientist. He's not a neurologist. He doesn't know. He's still equating differences between, you know, the emergent properties of cognition versus the physical reality of the brain. And honestly, the fact that I'm so drunk right now, I have killed this bottle, and still figuring out these correlations, I'm actually impressed with myself. So congratulations. moving on. So I just wanted to point out that he is a surgeon, not quite the diagnostician that Michael was indicating. So take that for what you will. We've all had different medical experiences. And at some point, you've had different interactions, and some of those may garner some interesting information. So take that for what you will, but he is a neurosurgeon, which does mean that he actually opens up people's skulls and works on your brain. That is no small task. No small task at all. I give him all the credit in the world. Congratulations on your 56 different honorary degrees from who knows where. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you know everything. You know, they say that doctors have a God complex or God has a doctor complex. You know, one way or the other, they say that, and there's good reason. So let's listen to what the rest of he has to say.
But I'm very hopeful that I'm not the only one who's willing to pick up the baton of freedom, because freedom is not free, and we must fight for it every day. Every one of us must fight for it, because we're fighting for our children and the next generation.
Governor Mike Huckabee, closing statement.
It seems like this election has been a whole lot about a person who's very high in the polls, but doesn't have a clue about how to govern. A person who has been filled with scandals and who could not lead. And, of course, I'm talking about Hillary Clinton.
Yes, because the way to prove that you're a good leader is to attack your opponent, not to say what makes you a good choice.
Leadership.
I could have sworn that he was talking about Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
He's the
other thing.
And who believes that once again we can be one nation under God. I'll be my best to do that, and thank
you. Sure, if you're from 1956.
Thank you for your support.
Governor Scott Walker.
Thanks. I'm a guy with a wife and two kids in a Harley. One article called me aggressively normal. I ran for governor because I was worried about my kids' future. Then I took on the big government union bosses, and we won. They tried to recall me, and we won. They target us again, and we won. We balanced the budget, cut taxes, and turned our state around with big, bold reforms. It wasn't too late for Wisconsin, and it's not too late for America. That's why I asked for your vote.
Yes, because what's going to work in Wisconsin is going to work for everybody everywhere.
Here's what I believe.
That makes sense.
Alive in this world. But Washington is holding us back. How we tax, how we regulate, we're not embracing the energy revolution in our midst, a broken immigration system that has been politicized rather than turning it into an economic driver. We're not protecting and preserving our entitlement system or reforming for the next generation. All these things languish while we have politicians in Washington using these as wedge issues. Here's my commitment to you, because I did it as Florida. We can fix these things. We can grow economically and restore America's leadership in the world so that Everybody has a chance to rise up. I humbly ask for your vote whenever you're going to get to vote, whenever the primary is. Thank you all.
As a Floridian, we have, as all of us, either current or former Floridians here, we have firsthand experience that your leadership was shit. Florida fucking sucks.
I will say that at least he's bilingual.
That's the only thing he's gotten in his favor.
He did marry a Hispanic woman as well. So he has been, which is why we sometimes, in all fun, refer to him as Hey Boosh, because he actually put himself on the electorate as being Hispanic. He ain't.
He is not. He's a fucking liar who did a shitty job in his state.
Yeah. It's humorous. It's comical, really. I don't necessarily respect everything that he's done, but I respect his gumption. He's got a lot of gumption. I will give him that.
David, sir. Our country is in serious trouble. We don't win anymore. We don't beat China in trade. We don't beat Japan with their millions and millions of cars coming into this country in trade. We can't beat Mexico at the border or in trade. We can't do anything right. Our military has to be strengthened. Our vets have to be taken care of. We have to end Obamacare, and we have to make our country great again, and I will do that. Thank you.
Gentlemen. I will say that was probably the most succinct of all the candidates up there. Even,
right.
I disagree.
Even though he still said nothing.
Yes. Yeah.
No buzzer for Trump.
No, I do believe that, yes, we do need to take care of our vets because we've sent them to war without real reason, and we need to take care of them for that. Everything else.
Yeah, but the Republican Party doesn't do that.
It's over.
That's it.
You relieved? You were nervous before? They don't look relieved. They're like, get me. Thank you all very much. And that will do it for the first Republican primary debate night of the 2016 presidential race. Thanks to the candidates who will now be joined by their families on stage. But we're not done. The Kelly File starts in a moment. I'll be running over to the other set. But first, Brett, Chris, they're here with me. We're going to say hello to the candidates. But
Dr. Carson,
how you doing?
Good to see you.
Yeah, you know what? We're done.
Yeah. It's over. It's over.
And I tell you what, let's touch base with this next week.
I want to end this on one very specific note, because we heard a lot of talk about going back to war and destroying Obamacare and all that stuff.
Always.
But let's just a couple things I want to point out that we didn't hear about, that they avoided talking about. They completely avoided talking about wealth inequality. They completely avoided talking about climate change. They completely avoided talking about student loan debt. And they mentioned briefly, in passing, one time, Citizens United.
Yeah.
And those are just – but that's just off the top of my head. Huge issues that the entire nation is talking about that none – of the candidates mentioned.
Yeah, those are all the issues on the Democratic side.
Yeah, but those are all issues that are important to the nation that they completely ignored. Yeah. And what they don't talk about is just as important as what they do talk about.
What do you got, David?
Here's one that none of them touched.
Mm-hmm.
We spent trillions of dollars going to war in Iraq.
Yeah.
They want to go to war again.
Almost perpetually, yeah.
And they also want to bitch about the deficit and the national debt being $18 trillion.
Right.
How are we going to go to war? You know, that's the thing that's the big elephant in the room that they just don't ever discuss. When they criticize Obama for he's not coming into these negotiations from a point of strength. Well, he hasn't been given a hand to work with. The secret's out. America's got $18 trillion in debt. They cannot afford another war.
No, no, absolutely not. Where would we get that money from? Nowhere.
Where would we go for that money?
Well, we put it on the credit card.
Well, guess what?
Increase the national debt, no matter what.
Well, guess what happens then? Then whoever you get that money from is going to add strings to that money.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to go to war with Iran. Oh, no, you're not. and Trump knows that part of the game. I'm going to run for this office. Oh, no, you're not. I'm going to pass this bill. Nope, that's not going to happen. You're going to pass this bill. You're going to ally with these people.
Yeah. Okay. Here's where we are. We're at 4 hours and 56 minutes and 43 seconds. I'm wrapping.
We're 20 minutes from me going to bed, no matter what happens.
Damn.
Right this second. Here we go. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for embarking with us on this episode 72 now of the O'Reilly Radio Podcast. And that is completely it for us tonight. We will see you next Friday at about 9:30 Eastern. In the meantime, the conversations continue on the web when we're sober. Head over to orillyradio.com. That's orillyradio.com. For all the links right at the top of the page, and do watch us live if you can in the IRC. Chat with us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you've liked what we've done here, you can help keep the lights on. Follow the Help Us link on the webpage. And go over. That'll take you over to patreon.com, patreon.com/Cowan. That's me. If that's too rich for you, you contribute to the show with other ideas, corrections, advertising offers, unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, etc., unsolicited advice by emailing overlayradiopodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail, 470-222-OREILLY. And that's it. Follow the Help Us link, except blah, blah, blah. I'll see you guys next time. Bye. Yeah.